Welcome to Our Parents Did What? A tour of the parenting perils of yesteryear. I'm Diane Aragona.
And I'm your co-host, Jen Tierney. Join us as we travel back in time to take a look at the sometimes unbelievable history of parenting. And excuse my son, who you might hear screaming in the background. Welcome to my house, everyone. I'm living during COVID-19.
Welcome to the chaos.
He's just bellowing in the background. So this is what happens. Usually we record at night when my family's sleeping and it's fine. And I said to Joe, I was like, Joe, you have to like take them and make them be quiet somewhere. And they're just like right outside the door screaming. Okay. It's fine. It's fine.
It's fine. Everything is fine. It's like that, Oh, I never remember.
With the fire behind it?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. But this I can't remember. Is that a GIF or a meme?
I think it was originally like a still comic.
Okay.
That then got like transposed into a GIF. So I think initially it was like a meme that then, I don't know.
But yes,
ask me to
I
tell
feel.
You the difference between a GIF and a meme. And I'll tell you that like, who cares? It's all nonsense.
Yeah, it is. But I feel on a daily basis. That dog in the burning room. Everything is fine.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Oh my goodness. All right. I think we're ready to dive into today's episode. Diane, hit me with your mom moment.
In our last episode, I was telling you I was lamenting, I guess, how my daughter was refusing to sleep in her crib for the past like 2 months, almost 2 months. And I was really just like getting upset about it and saying, nobody told me that you have to sleep train your kids like 4 times sometimes, depending on the child, I guess.
Sure.
I guess some babies just like sleep, but my baby, I've had to sleep train like 6,000 or 7,000 times.
Oh. So
like every few months, she goes through every sleep regression and she just, it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
And this past one, I finally just needed to sleep. So we sort of gave up for a while. But last night we said, okay, we're both home. You know, we have no excuse. We should probably do it now when we're both here than when we're both working late and out again, you know, when everything is back to normal.
Yeah.
So we tried a different technique. we had been doing Ferber for a long time.
Yep.
We switched to, I guess it's not technically the chair method, because like I know with the chair method, you slowly move closer to the door, and we didn't necessarily do that, but Chuck put her down and he sat in the rocking chair across from her and he didn't engage with her. He just sat.
Yes.
And he was on his phone and she cried for on and off for about 45 minutes or an hour.
Yep.
And then she fell asleep sitting up with her head pressed up against the bars. Which like killed me inside, but she eventually like flopped over.
That's hilarious.
So I guess it was a success, and she finally fell asleep around like 9:45.
Mm-hmm.
She woke up at 1, like around 1 o'clock. She woke up. Yep. I fed her, and then I put her back down, and she obviously freaked out again.
Was very upset. Yes,
but she only cried for about a half hour.
Okay,
because I think she was pretty tired, and then again she fell asleep with her head pressed up against the bars and like sitting up, and then she face planted into her lap, but like still sitting up, and I didn't know what to do. And Chuck was sleeping. I didn't want to wake him up, and I was like, "Do I leave her? I can't leave her." Do I move her? But then she might wake up. And so I left her for like a few minutes to see if she would right herself, and she didn't. So then I like went over and like, it was like, I didn't want a bomb to go off. And
yes,
just
of
like,
course.
I kind of like nudged her and she just fell over.
Oh.
And she didn't wake up.
Yeah. They're really funny when they finally go out.
It's like a switch gets turned off.
Yeah. It's really funny how that happens. Yeah.
And then she woke up at 5 and I just didn't have it in me to do it again. So I brought her to bed because I was like, if I put her in her crib, she's going to cry, but she's going to be up for the day.
Yeah.
So I just brought her to bed with me and she slept till 7:30. So I was like, and then Chuck was a little annoyed with me. He was like, you've ruined it. We have to start over. And I was like, I don't think I've ruined it.
No, because I mean, I don't know this for sure because I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor, but I've had 3 children, and I find that like somehow they can tell the difference between 9 p.m. when you're putting them to bed and 5:30 a.m. when the day's about to start. I don't know if it's like a biological thing or something where like their body just knows, oh, it's almost time to be awake. And so like, I think that you can snuggle them in the morning and have like that nice time where you're very physically close with them. And it's not going to spoil their sleep for when it's time to go to sleep at night. As long as they have like a consistent nighttime routine that their body can recognize, oh, this routine is happening and it's nighttime and I'm tired. And I think that that's fine.
Yeah, because I think if like I said, if I just left her to cry at 5, it's so close to being time to be up.
Yeah, she wouldn't have gone back down.
She'd just be up, and I don't want to be up at 5 because I was up half the night getting her to go to sleep.
Of course.
I am hoping that it's a little better tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea how it's going to go, but we'll see.
So I don't know why I'm having such a hard time thinking of a mom moment, because Lord knows they're ever present in my life right now. I think that my brain has actually turned into pudding and that's just the reality I live in now. So, you know, I apologize if this episode is like a little bit higgledy-piggledy, because that's how my brain is right now. It's just like a sieve. So this past weekend we had Easter and we obviously, as you do, dyed eggs. And dyeing eggs is not an only Easter activity in my house. It's any time the kids see eggs and see food coloring, they go, can we color the eggs? So it's something we do a couple times a year.
Oh, that's really sweet.
So yeah, like it's a fun activity and it's, you know, and so Joey was like, so these are eggs, right? And I was like, yeah. He was like, okay, can we have an egg sandwich? Like his favorite thing to eat for breakfast and lunch is an egg and cheese sandwich. And so he was like, well, can I have an egg and cheese sandwich? And I was like, yeah. So he takes the egg that he just dyed and he hits it on the table to like crack it open.
Oh, no.
So that
yeah.
He can have an egg and cheese sandwich, and discovers to his horror that what is inside is not what he expected at all.
No.
It's a hard boiled egg. And he just, have you ever seen those pictures of like children losing it and then like
yes,
the thing underneath that's just like, this is why my child is crying? This was like Joey completely lost it, and it was because it wasn't a regular egg. It was hard-boiled egg. And he was like, how do I have an egg and cheese sandwich? So Joe goes into the kitchen and gets two pieces of bread and a slice of like Kraft cheese and puts it onto the thing and like cracks open the egg and takes off the shell and puts it on the bread. And he's like, here you go. And Joey just like was so sad. He was
oh
like,
my God,
my life is ruined. Will I never get to have an egg and cheese sandwich again? like, I think he thought all eggs turned into hard-boiled eggs in that moment.
I mean, why wouldn't he think that?
I was like, oh, you poor thing. He was so upset. So
I love those photos of the kids just like freaking out about things.
They're really funny.
My favorite.
I know. Sometimes when I need a really, really good Schadenfreude laugh, I just look through those and laugh at very sad children, which I know isn't like a good thing to do, but people do it because you got to just let off some steam, man.
Well, I was laughing last night at the monitor, like when she, because Chuck was up there with her at first. So I was just sitting downstairs, like with the monitor by me. When she first like face planted, I was like, you have to laugh. She looked so ridiculous, but she was fast asleep.
Yeah. She's fine. It's fine. As long as they're fine, as long as they're not like I cannot watch videos of babies being hurt, cannot do it. Like any of those images of like a baby sitting in the grass, like playing and laughing, and then like their sibling like throws a bat, it like a plastic bat, and it hits the baby in the face. Like I can't watch those. They're terrible. So I like kids who are sad in a scenario in which their sadness is completely unwarranted.
Right.
Not kids who are really sad. Without realizing it, I have given you an amazing segue into today's topic with my story. I didn't even plan it. It just, like, as I was talking just now, I was like, this is perfect. This is exactly what we're talking about today. So today, I am going to tell you, it's a story about a child who was very, very, very sad about a series of things that happened to him. And who perpetrated these terrible things on this tiny little human? And why? And what we learned from it.
Oh, no.
So I'm going to tell you all about the Little Albert experiment. Have you heard of this?
I've never, but the fact that it's a child mixed with experiment makes me like real nervous for this, but
yes, yeah,
here we go.
Oh boy, get ready. All right, so in our last episode, you went over all of these different parenting advice books and articles and things from throughout history. And what I had intended on doing for the next episode came up during that episode. I was shocked. So would you like to take a guess as to who performed the Little Albert experiment?
What was his name? Watson, right?
Yeah, John B. Watson, the person I most love to hate in the world of psychology and child rearing.
Now, did you know about Watson before you started looking into this?
I did not.
Because I didn't either.
Oh my goodness. So there are only like, in this book that I've been reading about the history of parenting called Act Natural by Jennifer Traig, which I've been reading for like the longest time because, I don't know, I'm a mom and I read like a page or two every few days. He's like 3 pages in this like 500 page book. Like he's not a huge part of anything, but what he did was so bizarre and crazy that like it just immediately grabbed my attention and would not let go. And I was like, I need to know everything there is to know about this human and this little baby who is like, Little Albert was not his real name. He was given a pseudonym, which I guess was the only kind thing done to him.
Oh my God. Am I going to cry in this episode?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It wasn't anything like
no
physically
physical?
Damaging.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't anything like that. This man was a psychologist, so it was just damage to this poor little child's psyche. So let me give you a little bit of background on Mr. John B. Watson, because he is a doozy. So
yeah, I want to know because like I said in the last episode, I didn't dive too deeply into anybody specifically, like, and I want to because some of these people seem totally crazy.
Yeah.
So, tell me more.
Yeah. All right. So I'll give you like the real high level view of Watson and his sort of upbringing and, you know, just to sort of set the stage. So he was born in Travelers Rest, South Carolina in 1878. So right before the turn of the century, his father was an alcoholic who left their house when he was 13 to have a relationship with two other women. Together, I guess? I don't know. It wasn't
two.
Exactly clear. Yes, like two women. I guess some very happy polyamorous thing. Fine, whatever. But he never forgave his father, just like carried a lifelong disdain for his dad. And then the other thing was that his mom was this really devout Baptist, and religion was like the most important part of how she raised her children. And so because of that, I guess, because like he was mad at his father and his mother, just like everything was about religion, he developed this lifelong hatred for religion and his father. And he was like a real serious atheist. And I don't know, that's just, I mean, he just had, I guess, a bad childhood and like just ended up taking that out on generations of children to come. So
clearly,
it's just a bad time. So basically, Watson's most famous for the creation and development of a branch of psychology called behaviorism. Basically, the idea behind behaviorism is in the nature versus nurture dichotomy, nature doesn't exist at all. It's all about nurture. When you are born, it doesn't matter what's inside of you. It only matters what is done around you and to you and how you behave. Your feelings are meaningless. The feelings of others are meaningless. You will be a direct result of what happens to you. And there's no, like, psychology shouldn't be about the mind. It should only be about behaviors. That's his whole thing. It's like, it's not about what you think and feel. It's about what you do. That's it.
That's bizarre.
It was real nuts. So, but he just got in at the right time because this took off. Like, it was huge. People loved behaviorism.
It's like, it's right when science became like popular, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we should do what's scientific.
That's right. So he was like, psychology should no longer be about the mind. It should be about the science of behavior and scientific experiment and understanding why people do what they do based on what has happened to them before. You know, so he loved, for instance, Pavlov. Loved it. Loved classical conditioning. But one thing you will like about him, Diane, is that he hated eugenics. Hated it.
Well, thank God.
So at least one good thing about this man. Hated eugenics. In 1920, so he was, I can do math, 33? He was working at Johns Hopkins University. And he was voted the sexiest teacher, because why not?
Wait, was he really?
Yeah.
Do we have a photo of him? Is he, yes. Is he super sexy?
No.
Is he a fox?
No. No. Absolutely not. I have a photo of him. He was, I mean, okay, so if he were alive today, he probably would be pretty good looking. He kind of looks like Christopher Reeve a little bit. Like, he's got that real strong chin.
Oh, I see that.
Yeah.
I see. He actually looks like he aged better. He's a little funky looking as a younger man.
Yeah. So I don't know. Interesting human. We'll put up some pictures of him.
In one of these with glasses, he almost looks like a beefed up Stanley Tucci.
I know. That's such a good one. I love Stanley Tucci.
I do too. Okay, go on.
So he was considered an attractive man, yada, yada. So let's talk a little bit about his personal life, just a tiny bit. So he, at this point in time, is married to a woman named Mary Ikes. And Mary Ikes, he met in graduate school, and they had two children together. So John and Mary Watson had two children named John and Mary Ikes Watson. Because no. Why not? So... Oh my goodness. So John B. Watson is working at Johns Hopkins University, and he is getting really, really, really interested in child psychology. I mean, in psychology and in raising children, because it sort of combines all of these things he's really passionate about. Like, he's passionate about this idea that everything is based on behavior and that a person is born and can be shaped into anything you want. So it's very much like that blank slate theory that Locke was talking about. Like, people are just born and then you can rewrite them however you want them to be. And that it was parents' responsibility to raise good people through, like, his recommended approach, which was just bonkers. So there's a quote from his 1928 book, Psychological Care of Infant and Child, where he said, "There is a sensible way of treating children. Let your behavior always be objective and kindly firm. Never hug or kiss them. Never let them sit in your lap. If you must, kiss them once on the forehead when they say goodnight. Shake hands with them in the morning. Give them a pat on the head if they have made an extraordinarily good job of a difficult task. Try it out. In a week's time, you will find how easy it is to be perfectly objective with your child and at the same time kindly. You will be utterly ashamed of the mawkish, sentimental way you have been handling it."
What?
He had a lot of like stuff going on.
This just screams daddy issues.
Right? Yeah. So like he had a lot of things going on. So as I said, loved Pavlov, loved the idea of classical conditioning, and he wanted to prove that people like dogs could be classically conditioned. And so he was working at Johns Hopkins. And he found a woman. Like, there's a lot of murkiness around the truth of the story. And there's a little bit of question about who little Albert really was. But the most likely, I'll tell the most likely version of the story. And if you want to hear some of, like, the other presumed possibilities, you can kind of look it up and read it elsewhere. But so basically, he's working at Johns Hopkins. There's a graduate student named Rosalie Rayner who is helping him with this experiment, because she also is like, I also think classically deconditioning children would be incredibly interesting. And if we can prove that, then we can prove that, like, all people are just, like, behaviorism is real. And so they find a woman who is a wet nurse at the hospital, and whether they coerced her or they paid her, like, it's unclear how they got little Albert from her, or if they just, like, took him without her knowing. Because they did these experiments, like, during the day while she was working at the hospital. She'd bring him with her, and then they'd, like, take him and do these experiments. And so the experiments were, they'd sit him on this little mattress on the floor. You can watch a video of it, which as I was saying before, I have a really hard time watching videos of children being like sad and in pain for real. Like, I felt physically ill when I watched this because it was so awful. So basically, they took this little baby and they sat him on this mattress, and then they took all of these different animals that were like a rat and a dog and a bunny and all these animals that are like pretty innocuous, and would like put them on him. And he'd sit there and touch them and play with them because he's 9 months old, like a little guy, basically same age as my kid, and would like pet them and have a nice time. And it was very sweet. And then a couple days later, they'd like cycle through all the animals again. But every time they put the animal on him, they'd hit this giant steel pipe with a hammer behind him, because all creatures, all humans at least, are very afraid of sudden loud noises.
Yeah.
So they would, every time they gave him this, like a sweet little animal to play with, they'd just make this really loud, scary sound, which would make him cry. And so they eventually were able to make him fear anything that was furry, because they'd put something furry on him and he'd expect that this horrible loud sound was coming. And so he'd immediately start screaming and try to like crawl away.
Oh my God.
So it was anything that had any fur on it. He even like, this is terrible picture of Rosalie Rayner wearing a Santa Claus mask that has like a furry beard, and he's like screaming bloody murder. So, and the caption says, "Now he even fears Santa Claus."
It's just, oh my God.
So awful. This poor little kid just terrorized by these two adults. And the video is really awful because it's just these two adults like terrorizing a baby.
How did they not see it that way? I don't know.
I don't know. They were just trying to like use science to make a point. I don't know. I mean, obviously, like, you could never do this now. It's incredibly unethical. But at the time, I guess those rules just didn't exist and you could do whatever you wanted.
Yeah.
So there's a little uncertainty about who little Albert was. William Barger is who is believed to have actually been little Albert. His nickname was Albert. I don't know why, when his name was William, but he was called Albert his whole life. And his mother was a wet nurse at the hospital. And his niece was interviewed a few years after he passed away by somebody who like tracked it down and was like, "Oh, maybe this is little Albert." And they talked to her and she was like, "Oh yeah, he was really, really afraid of dogs. Like, we made fun of him for it." And he never knew why. He would obviously not have any memory of this experiment. And
well, I was going to ask how long they did this.
They only did it for like a month. It was,
oh, okay.
Or maybe 3 months. I think they did it from when he was 9 months to a year old. And then
so he would have no way of remembering.
He would have no way of remembering. And the mother eventually found out about it. Like in the most common story, she didn't know what the experiments were and what was happening. And when she found out, she took him and moved away because she was just like, "This was horrible what they did to my child."
Yeah.
So yeah, this guy was like a real piece of work. So let's talk for just a hot second about Rosalie Rayner, because she was like this graduate student who was working with him on this little Albert experiment. And at the same time, they got a little friendly.
I knew it.
And started carrying on an affair. And eventually Watson left his wife, Mary, who he had already had these two children with, to marry Rosalie. And they ended up having two children together.
Are they named Rosalie and John?
No, wouldn't that be hilarious? No. So they had, so their two children, let me see if I can find their names, William and James. And they decided that they were going, because this like truly needed to be as mind-bendingly screwed up as possible, they decided that they were going to raise their two sons in this continuously running behaviorist experiment. And so their two boys were raised in the exact way that paragraph I read before describes. There was no warmth and love, and it was just like, there was love, but like, the kind of love that you give at such a distance that it's not clear that it's love. Like, I'm doing what's best for you, you know? So here's another really lovely quote from Watson. Parents today are incompetent. Most of them should be indicted for psychological murder. Won't you then remember, when you are tempted to pet your child, that mother love is a dangerous instrument, an instrument which may inflict a never-healing wound, a wound which may make infancy unhappy, adolescence a nightmare, an instrument which may wreck your adult son or daughter's vocational future and their chances for marital happiness. Huh. And people ate this up.
I can't believe that.
They just loved it because it was science and it was new and it was different. And so he just ran off with the ability for people to parent in the 1920s and 30s. And somehow, even with all of this, these bonkers bananas things that this man did, he was awarded a gold medal from the American Psychological Association shortly before he died in 1957, when he was 80.
Way too close to present.
They were like, your contributions to psychology have been so, so many and so amazing that we must give you the gold medal. Thank goodness we moved away from this, because like...
Thank God for Spock. Jeez. Mm-hmm.
So Spock was... a result, he came from this thinking. Like, he was very much like, I'm going to raise my children this way. And he raised his first child following Watson's advice and then was like, this is wrong. And then wrote his stuff, you know? So like, he became convinced that this was wrong after doing it. So basically, like, all of Watson's research, for the most part, in hindsight, we have learned, was all completely bananas and bonkers and wouldn't actually hold up in today's rigor. Nothing was ever duplicated. He never had, like, control subjects. He didn't have multiple people that he was testing. Like, he would just test one subject with one of his hypotheses and go, this is real. And then he'd, like, write an article about it. It was just such early days that he could get away with that. And so he wrote all of these things and was, like, super prolific, and right before he died, burned it all. Like, he had a trove of, like, personal writings and letters and things that described how he felt about the world of psychology. He just burned it all. So there's a lot of stuff that historians will never know.
What is the point of that?
Right? I don't know. Like, as somebody who's really into the idea of legacy, this man is a complete mystery to me. I love to hate him. So I also want to take a moment to point out some of his really charming and obtuse misogyny. So... he dedicated his book, Psychological Care of Infant and Child, he dedicated it to the first mother who brings up a happy child.
Ooh, mic drop.
Right? He's just the worst. So he had this thing that, like, women just were not fit to actually be mothers, and that we should just have all children sent off to places to be raised, and that the people caring for them should change every few weeks so that they would never develop any attachments to anyone.
And what?
Just like, yeah, like, he was very extreme.
God, poor women. You can't have a job. You can't go to school. Now you don't even, you know, the one thing you biologically usually can do, you can't do it right.
Yes, exactly. You are just, no.
Useless.
He had this real wackadoo theory that we should not allow anyone to procreate for 20 years so that we could properly study childhood and child rearing so that we could do it properly. And that during that time, as children were created so that we could study them, if you did a series of tests and whatever on them and it became clear that there had been a mistake made somewhere and that the child would not develop into a successful human adult, that they should then be euthanized. He was just, there was nothing about him that wasn't extreme. So,
oh my God.
It's never ending. I could go on and on. So let me see if I can find, I have two more really big things. One of his most famous lines is from a 1925 book that he wrote on behaviorism. So this is his like argument for his belief that behaviorism is right, he says.
Okay.
Give me a dozen healthy infants, well-formed, and my own specified world to bring them up in, and I'll guarantee to take any one at random and train him to become any type of specialist I might select. Doctor, lawyer, artist, mechanic chief, and yes, even beggar man and thief, regardless of his talents, penchants, tendencies, abilities, vocations, and race of his ancestors.
It's so self-centered. It's like nothing about you matters. I am going to create you. It's like this God complex almost.
It is like a God complex. It's really bizarre. So there's some evidence to suggest that his wife, Rosalie, on the surface, very much seemed to be on board with all this. Like, she only ever wrote one thing. She only ever published one thing without her husband. Everything that ever was published with her name on it, except for this one thing, was her and John Watson. So she has this one piece called I Am the Mother of Behaviorist Sons. And in it, it shows this very interesting conflict where it seems like she painfully loves her children and does have human emotions and cares for them and realizes the struggle and the turmoil she's created in them because of what her and her husband have done. But at the same time, it's super tempered because her husband is who her husband is. And so she still like defers to him.
So crazy.
So she ate a piece of bad fruit when she was 35 years old, got dysentery and died.
Oh.
I know. It was very sudden. And they were living in Connecticut. She had these two boys, William and James. And he had with the first wife, John and Mary. And John, William, and James all attempted suicide. William succeeded.
Oh, no.
So, like, they were all real screwed up. And Mary, the daughter, her daughter, so the granddaughter of John B. Watson, is an actress named Mariette Hartley, who is the founder of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and an actress and bipolar disorder advocate. And her father also committed suicide. And I believe that she was raised in a house where it was very much completely driven by her grandfather's belief system. And so she is now sort of like this still living person, this like relic of John B. Watson's work, who's just like, it was all insane and everyone suffered because of it. So she's an interesting person to look up as well, because she has a lot to say on the topic.
Would we know her from anything as an actress?
So the name doesn't sound familiar. I looked her up. I mean, she's older. She's 79. She was born in 1940. What has she been in? She was in Gunsmoke.
Okay.
She was in a movie in 2019. So like, she still does things sometimes. She was in Encino Man.
Ah!
Hilarious.
Oh, she was in MASH.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. It looks like she did a lot more television than she did movies.
She was in Star Trek.
Oh my gosh. I know her.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's great. Weirdly, a lot of real good came out of John Watson and his existence. Like, because of him, we have a woman like Mariette Hartley, who has done some really, really incredible work in the world of psychology and getting money for funding, for understanding bipolar disorder, and for helping people who are suicidal. Like, she's done some really great work. And then also, because of his crazy writing, Spock was inspired to go and write his amazing stuff, which has helped countless families and women to raise their children. So I guess something good came out of this monster of a human being.
I guess that's the bright side.
All I can think is this poor little baby was just terrorized. I'll put the video up in the show notes. It's only about 3 minutes long, and it's just a baby who's getting animals like dropped on it. And so it's like, it's not that bad. But you think to yourself, there are these two adult humans watching this child be so sad
That's the sinister part of it.
It is awful. There's a study done today. I forget what the name of it is, but you can see it in the Netflix documentary Babies. It's in the first episode, and I think it's called the Straight Face Experiment. And it's basically where, like, all these moms who have very, like, warm, loving relationships with their children, they bring in their babies who are, like, 3 months old or whatever, and they put them in this little chair in front of them, and they play with them, and, you know, and the babies are hooked up to all these electrodes and stuff, like, all of these things to, like, measure their brains, and the moms as well. And the moms play with them and all this so they can measure all of, like, the baby's levels of things during play. And then the mom just goes stoic, like, completely blank-faced, nothing, for, like, 5 minutes. And you watch the baby get increasingly distressed because it doesn't understand why it can't initiate a relationship with this person who is their everything.
Yeah.
And when the experiment ends and they say, okay, you can pick up the baby again, the mother is just like, oh my God, thank God. You know, and they just like pick up the baby and just hold them. And I think to myself, the only reason that they could do this horrible experiment on this baby was that that baby didn't belong to them. I don't think a mother is capable. I mean, mothers obviously are capable of that because there are plenty of mothers over time who have horribly abused their children and they're not even really mothers. Yes. They're monsters. Fine. Yes. But somebody who is a loving and caring, and once the mother found out what happened, she stole him away and said, you cannot come anywhere near my child.
Right. Well, they probably had this like rosy-eyed view of, even if she knew they were doing something scientific, she was probably like, oh, it's science. It's for the good of my baby.
Yeah.
I don't know what she knew, but.
Yeah. Like the experiment ended before it was intended to because that baby got taken away.
I can't even imagine what they would have done.
Right? Who knows? I don't know. They would have just like conditioned that. And he was like, oh, well, I can decondition him, and never did. Just never gave the woman the information on how to decondition him or, you know, and but because of, let me see if I can find it because I closed my book while we were talking, which is just not helpful. Mary Cover Jones was someone who worked with Watson on a set of procedures aimed at eliminating the fear in another little boy named Peter. And Peter had a similar fear. He feared white rabbits and rats, and they didn't know why. And Watson and Mary Cover Jones worked to get rid of this, like decondition out of him this fear. So I guess it was Watson. Oh, we'll give him like a little credit deconditioning another child. But I don't want to give him any credit. I don't want to give him any good feelings. He's awful.
But you don't have to.
It's just so much of this. We can just train like they're animals. I know we're animals. I understand. Like scientifically, I understand human beings are just really smart animals. But like,
it's a lot more complicated than that.
It's so much more complicated than that. And there's love and emotions and things like that to consider. And this man just didn't consider those things.
No. Sounds like he was just an absolute nightmare of a human being.
Yeah, it really does. It sounds like he was, and everything I could find about him just sounds like he was this person who carried a grudge and was just crotchety. And so, yeah, I'm glad he isn't alive today. And I hope that no one ever does experiments like this one again.
No, hopefully that's something that would never be allowed to
occur. Oh, yeah, it's completely illegal to do anything like this now. Oh, my God.
Although when you do research like some scientific experiments, I'm sometimes surprised like when you find some of these scandals that pop up of like people being in experiments and they don't know they were in experiments. Like,
oh, yeah.
How recently in history that occurred.
So that's my story. Oh my gosh, it's not a happy story. So I apologize, but I feel like if we're going to talk about really screwed up things from the history of parenting, we had to really give Watson some time and attention.
Oh, because
he is just like, he feels like the pièce de résistance of just like crappy parenting.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's it.
Wow. I feel like he's probably the tip of the iceberg.
I think we're going to find worse.
Yeah. If you are listening and you are in the area of like child psychology or early childhood development and you know anything more or anything interesting, like interesting little nugget of information, or if you know of another crazy scientist or, you know, child development expert from history that we should look into, let us know, because this was fascinating.
I bet that our sister Steph would have some things to weigh in on here.
Yes. Let
so
us
like,
know.
Steph,
if you know anything.
Hit us up.
Hit us up, please.
If you have anything to share with us, you can send us an email at opdwpodcast@gmail.com. Very excited for anything you have to share with us, any mom moments, any ideas for topics for us to cover. You can also get in touch with us through a bunch of different social media platforms. We're on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram at OPDW Podcast. And if you know us in real life, just hit us up on our mobiles.
Yeah, we want to hear from you. And our music is by Theo Rosenberg. So thank you, Theo.
Thanks, Theo. You the best.
You are. Until next time.
Please don't greet your children with a handshake, especially during the pandemic.